Eight, six.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2. All right, this room.
All right, we're unmuted. I'll get rid of that. And I think we are good to go. You can see the screen. Great.
So for those of you joining us online, there's only one person in the room here in Kansas City. So this is going to be a very intimate discussion probably. So we'll start off with who we are.
So, my name is Jason Robb. I am the Seek and Find Coordinator at the Southeast Kansas Library System. I've been working as the Seek and Find Coordinator since 2013. I've technically been working with COHAS since 2009. Our consortium adopted it in 2008, which we'll get into later on. I've also been heavily involved with the COHA US, which is the national organization users group. I was the secretary from 2018 to 2021, and then we are from Kansas. So we also are both involved in organizing the COHA Kansas Explorers groups, which is our statewide regional group. Maybe
Maybe just touch the picture.
you the next. There you go.
So I am George Williams. I'm the Next Search Catalog Coordinator at Northeast Kansas Library System. And I've been there since 2016, but I've been using COHA since 2012 when the consortium I worked at in Idaho migrated to COHA. I am a former president of the COHA US organization. I was the vice president in 2018 and the president in 2019, right before the whole world exploded. And why are we here? So the COHA community, as mentioned in the pre-keynote talk, the COHA community has decided to join the OLF. The COHA community has been around for 25 years, and it has grown its own governance naturally without any governing body. And the decision was made, though, that it would be nice to have a foundation that could hold assets, that could pay for things like our website and hosting and all of that kind of stuff, all of the kinds of things you need as an organization. And so the COHA community is like this close to being a member of the OLF. And as stated earlier, you know, when last year there was a vote to create a foundation and join the OLF in 2024 at the conference, which was about the same time last year in Montreal, we created a foundation steering committee, which I'm a member of. And we've drafted bylaws over the last year. We've done a lot of work. We've explored a lot of options, and we're hoping to have a governance board in place in November, when the International COHA Con is going on in New Zealand, and that board will take the final steps of joining the OLF.
So why are we here physically? Kansas has a huge usage of COHA, which again, I'm just teasing things, but George and I are both in Kansas. So we figured, hey, conference is in Kansas City. Let's head on up and talk to some people about what we love about COHA.
I think there's one more slide about Kansas.
So Kansas and the COHA community. Kansas started adopting in 2007. Most of the libraries that started using it went live in 2008. We'll get into like the different consortia here in a minute. We recently migrated a library. I don't know if George put this on the slide because he recently migrated a library too, but we're always migrating more libraries into our consortia. And Kansas as a whole is also taking it up. Even the ones outside of the consortia are, the bigger libraries are starting to pick it up as well. I did put a link here at the bottom. We did write a paper several years back now about the adoption of COHA in Kansas called The Kansas Story, A Sea of COHA Green on the Plains, which you can access via our slides if you want to check that out.
I did not take part in writing that article. Did you?
Yep.
Oh, you were.
I was part of the article. I think it was like 2016.
Before I moved to Kansas.
It was a while back. So there's some updated information, but it's also a good sort of historical look back at why we chose COHA and how we got to where we are today.
Yes, and we called this presentation Ad Astra, Per Aspera, which is the Latin for to the stars through difficulties. Or through difficulties to the stars. It's Latin, and you can say it however you want. And it's the Kansas State motto. And this is actually based on a presentation we did 2 years ago at a different conference. So, but I thought we would start with a brief history of COHA. So COHA started out as the answer to a Y2K bug. The Horowhafuna Trust Library in Lavan, New Zealand, was using a proprietary ILS that had a Y2K bug. They knew that when they opened for business on January 2nd, 2000, that their system would not work. And so they hired a team of developers from Wellington. And those developers said, well, how hard can that be to write an ILS? We've got 4 months, no problem. And they did it. They cracked it out. And between September and December, the developers built COHA 1.0. It was put into production on January 3rd, and a mailing list was created early on. And in June, on SourceForge, the COHA base code was made available to anybody who wanted to download it. And within 3 hours, 10 people had downloaded it. And by the end of 2000, only those four original developers had any code in COHA. Oh, I think we... got these backwards. So between 2001 and 2005, the community started to form, and they adopted Bugzilla as a bug tracking software. They created a wiki. The original Koha did not support Mark, but it was added within 2 years. And in Athens County Public Library in that time period became the first library in the United States to use Koha as their ILS. And by the end of those first 5 years, there were 39 people that had code in Koha. Conferences started to happen. Koha adoption began in Kansas. The 10-year celebration of Koha was in Wellington. And by the end of 2010, 130 developers had code in Koha.
So in the 2010s, the community set a biannual release schedule, which has changed over the years. Now it's based on the month they release, so it's a little less confusing. So releases come out in May and November, and then every month there are bug fix patches along the way to catch the bugs that happen in the interim. The first Koha US conference, which is, again, the user group for the national United States users group. We were originally called Kohana, which was Koha North America, but we pulled it back a little bit after some pushback. So we call ourselves Koha US now. Our first conference was in Wenatchee, Washington in 2015. And by the end of 2015, over 300 people had code in Koha. In 2017, Koha US became a nonprofit organization, so we are a 501c3 shortly before our fourth annual conference. And then, as George mentioned, 20th anniversary, 2020, over 400 people had code in by then.
In 2022, you know, one of the reasons I thought that it would be good to talk about Koha at this conference is, like I said, Koha is this close to joining the OLF, and Kansas City is like this close to Kansas. But we hosted the Koha US, the Koha US conference in Lawrence, Kansas was the international Koha conference as well. After the pandemic, it became hard to find somebody that wanted to host an international conference. In 2023, there was work began on a major update to the acquisitions module. And then, like I said, last year, we formed the Foundation Steering Committee. And by the end of 2024, over 500 people have code in Koha. The 2025 conference is coming in Wellington, New Zealand next month. Jason's going to go to that. I'm going to sit that one out. I will be at a conference in Nashville. No, that's October 15th, but it's coming soon. So I didn't feel like I could go to New Zealand without taking my wife, and that wasn't going to happen. So that's not a conversation I wanted to have with her, is, you know, why do I get to go to New Zealand and she doesn't? So based on Marshall Breeding's data at librarytechnologies.org, there are 4,728 libraries worldwide using Koha, which makes it the most used integrated library system in the world. And Marshall believes that this number is an underreporting of actual Koha use. Anybody can download it, anybody can install it. There are 4,728 libraries that are reported to him that they're using Koha, but he believes there are many libraries that just aren't reporting that they've downloaded it and they're using it. If you ask somebody from Circe Dynex how many installations of Symfony they have, they're going to know exactly how many they have, because they get a check from all of those people. Koha doesn't. So now we're on to Kansas.
Let's talk about Kansas some more. So we like Koha in Kansas. I wanted to, are you from Kansas? Okay, so these facts are going to be not new to you, but here we go. Kansas is the Sunflower State. We became a state in 1861. We've already gone through the motto. Some famous residents are Amelia Earhart, Wyatt Earp, Kal-El, Dorothy Gale. Kansas is a fun state. I am born and raised Kansas, so I've been here my whole life, and it's near and dear to my heart. And I love that we're charging forward with Koha in Kansas. I'll let George talk about the regional library system.
Yeah, so there's the map of Kansas again, but we've overlaid the regional library systems on there, and this slide has the names of the regional library systems. So for those of you watching online that aren't from Kansas, Kansas is divided into seven regions, and each of those regions has a regional library system. And the purpose of the library systems is to ensure that all Kansas residents have free access to public libraries. And the way that the regional systems provide access to everybody is we collect tax money from everybody that isn't already being taxed by a smaller local agency that collects library taxes on behalf of libraries in their area. So we tax the people that aren't already being taxed for library services. And then we turn around and we give that money back to the libraries that are in our region in the form of grants and services. And COHA is one of the services. Jason and I are services. and we have four of the regions have system-based COHA systems. And this is a map of all of the public libraries in Kansas, 322 public libraries. And I guess I put me on the, so the little tornadoes each represent a COHA library in the central Kansas library system. There are 51 libraries there. They began using COHA in 2007. They were the first adopters of COHA in Kansas. Currently, their consortium consists of 51 public libraries and two school districts. Their headquarters is in Great Bend. And in addition to COHA, they're also using Aspen Discovery as a discovery layer for their system, which is an open source discovery layer. And that's a picture of their OPAC set to the Great Bend Library. So I'll let Jason talk about his system.
So I'm from the Southeast Kansas Library System. That's the southeast corner of Kansas. We are a 15-county library system. My symbol is sharks for reasons I don't want to get into, but we talk a lot about sharks and fishes in my consortium. We're currently at 50 public libraries. Technically 49 live. We'll be going live with the 50th next month or the month after when I get a date nailed down. So we started using COHA in 2008. We came to the decision after a consortia in our area sort of exploded. Not really. It was more of a, they were going with a proprietary software and that proprietary company was going to inflate the costs 10, 20, 30 fold. So it became impossible for us to stay with them if we wanted to complete our mission of automating all these tiny rural little libraries that don't have any budget for an automated system. So in 2008, we started with around 11 libraries. And since then, we've been cataloging them into COHA. We call that retrospective conversion. And also with help from our vendor migrating libraries that are on a system already, we'll pull their MARC data and put it into our catalog.
Out of curiosity, what's your smallest library?
Our smallest library has a service population of about 80. And our largest, I couldn't tell you, 10,000 maybe. But we're, and our big library is a medium library anywhere else in the world, if that. So most of our libraries are small and rural. We do have, as I said, 50 public libraries, three academics, more in the pipeline. We are headquartered in Iola, Kansas, which you probably never heard of, but that is the system headquarter in Allen County, and managed by my organization, the Southeast Kansas Library System. And this is a picture of our OPAC. We don't use Aspen, so we're just using the vanilla OPAC from built into COHA that we've heavily customized to our user needs.
This is my system. This is Northeast Kansas Library System. We're smaller than the other systems in size. Geographically, we only cover 14 counties, but it does represent like 42% of the population of the state of Kansas. the big libraries in our region are Topeka Shawnee and Kansas City, Kansas, and Johnson County, but they are not using Koha. Our biggest library is actually Leavenworth, which is a town of about 35 to 40,000 people. And our smallest town is Corning, which I think has a population of about 150. But NECLS, and our system is usually abbreviated as NECLS. Not all the systems abbreviate by turning their system name into a word. Some of them don't like it at all. But we began using Koha in 2008. We've currently got 42 public libraries. One of those public libraries has three branches in the county, the main library and then three branches. We have a school district that has four locations and one academic library, Highland Community College. Our headquarters is in Lawrence, and we do use Aspen Discovery as our discovery layer. That's one of our libraries, the Axtell Public School in Axtell, Kansas. So next up is South Central.
So the South Central Kansas Library System is different than the rest of the systems and how they grant money. So for the other three that we've talked about so far, we are providing our Koha Consortia as a service. So I coordinate, we have staff to help our libraries as to support them. For South Central, they're a little bit different. So they're the green blob. I think they're just like a book icon in there.
Yeah, they're the library icon.
Library icon. So they started, so since they're structured differently and the regional system isn't administering their consortium, it was actually taken on by the Derby Public Library. They took the money that the system grants them and decided, let's put together a Koha consortia because we like Koha. So they started in 2018. They've pulled in eight public libraries from the area. And as I said, they're managed independently by member libraries. So they're really, we throw around the term consortia quite a bit. Technically, we're a shared catalog administered as a service. CanShare is probably the closest thing in Kansas we have to an actual Koha consortia where it's managed by the members of the consortium. We do still, it's not a total dictatorship in my corner of the state anyways, we do still like collaborate via policy committees and that sort of thing, but we have the final say on most things, especially the important stuff like privacy and data storage and that data retention. And here's a picture of the CanShare OPAC. They also are not using Aspen, so this is just the vanilla OPAC there from out of the box Koha, and they've done some customization.
Yeah, they've added a carousel and some other things.
All right.
And this is the newest catalog using Koha in Kansas. The reason that I said that, you know, our most recent libraries joined within the last year is NORCAT in North Central Kansas Library System, all represented by the little Wildcats, because that's the home of K-State, which their mascot is the Wildcat. They just started using Koha in 2023. And they started off with, I think, three libraries. And in just the last 2 years, they have upped to 29 libraries. Most of those libraries were using a proprietary system. They were all using the same proprietary system. And they weren't particularly happy with it. And so they've all been migrating, not just to Koha, but it's the first time that many of these libraries have been working together cooperatively in a shared catalog. So their headquarters is in Manhattan. That's Manhattan, Kansas, not Manhattan, New York. And they're managed by North Central Kansas Library System. Amber was originally part of the proposal for doing this, but she's not here today. So we get to talk about them without them being here. And they've really customized their Koha. I actually really like the look of it. It's a bold color choices. But they've done a great job just in the last 2 years moving from not being organized together to share to they've really gone all out. So additionally, you know, so this total is 180 public libraries in Kansas using COHA. Additionally, there are other libraries, including the State Library of Kansas. They began using COHA to manage their in-state electronic library card system for accessing digital databases in 2023. And so they've adopted COHA, and there's talk about them planning on doing more with COHA in the future. I think I just walked over your slide that was had your name on it. So let's go for it. So there are other school districts, academic libraries, private libraries using COHA throughout Kansas. I found out recently that there is a business in Lawrence that's using COHA to manage their internal collection. I have never met them. It's the Association of Golf Superintendents. The National Association of Golf Superintendents apparently uses COHA. And I drive by their building every now and then. The grounds are immaculate, so which seems appropriate. So that's 322 public libraries in Kansas. 180 are using COHA. 142 are non-COHA public libraries. So that's 55.9% of Kansas public libraries are using COHA. So the way I look at that is like we're getting there. You know, we're over halfway. So how do our libraries compare with each other? This is where we talk over each other.
Oh yeah, I'll come stand closer.
So like Jason said, you know, there's the regional systems versus CanShare, you know, the North Central, Central, Northeast, and Southeast are kind of centrally managing their COHA systems. CanShare is independent. And we've all had different reasons for creating these systems.
I talked about it a little bit. For us, it was the need to automate. There was actually an LSTA project way back then that was a push to get all of the non-automated libraries up so that they had a fully compliant ILS that could talk with Z3950 to the state library's catalog so that then sharing could be enabled statewide, agnostic of which ILS they were actually using. So in the beginning, we used those LSTA funds to bring libraries up into the consortia. And from there, it's when that money went away, then we have the libraries pay a little bit. We've got fee structure next on there.
Yeah.
So for us, we don't charge them a lot, but we want them to put money in their budget to realize that this costs something. Like if the money were to go away, if the systems were to go away, they need to recognize that they're just not going to have something if they're not putting some money away for it.
Right. We have our fee structure is based on how big their budget is as reported to the IMLS. So if their budget is below a certain amount, the base amount that we charge is we do not self-host COHA. We pay a company called Bywater Solutions to host it for us and to maintain COHA for us and all of the dependencies, all the dependent systems. And so our base fee for the smallest libraries is what it would cost if we just took the number of libraries and divided that hosting fee by the number of libraries.
And ours is based on institutional budget as well.
Yeah.
So like we've got four different tier levels, and if there are certain points, then they pay a certain amount. We also incentivize coming to our users group meetings, which happen 3 times a year. As long as they come to 2, we'll give them a little discount because we do want to like foster those connections as a users group.
Right. And decision-making, democracy versus dictatorship. I try to be fairly democratic. I try to, you know, if there's something new coming in a new version of COHA, I try to, if I think it's something that is maybe going to be controversial, I will say, you know, should we turn this on? Should we not? But if it's something that I think is essential, I don't give them a choice. I just say this is happening. And I know
I'm a little more squishy. So I will usually, when there's new features coming out, I'll pore over them and I'll weed out anything that we're not going to use immediately. But if there's stuff that we need to talk about and decide as a group, we do that at our users groups. And we still reserve the right as the system to be the final deciding factor. But if there's a lot of pushback on something, I'm going to take that into consideration because I do want to maintain harmony as much as I can between my member libraries.
Yes. One of the great things about Koha is that it is customizable and it is, you can customize it to your needs. And so I try to make sure that there's input when needed, but there've been some things that it's like, you know, this is just essential. So, I think all of our libraries now are in the position where all of them are doing one patron, one card. I think all of the systems are like that now. We used to have one of the systems where you would have, I mean, they have 50 libraries and you would have, if you wanted to use each of the libraries, you would have to go there and get an individual card for each of the members. And they stopped that about 7 or 8 years ago. It took them a while to shift that. The most recent thing that we've had an issue with is in Kansas, they created a state law that says that when you get a library card, if any taxpayer funded organization is collecting information about a person's gender, then their gender information that you store in the data has to be the same as the gender information on their birth certificate, which the state did not include a penalty for if you don't do that, but we decided to just nip that in the bud and we eliminated the ability for our Koha to store gender information. We just removed all the information we had and we disabled those fields in Koha so that our libraries can't collect that and store it in the ILS. I don't know how you guys dealt with that.
We sort of leave it up to local policy a lot of the times. We've got this set in a way that, and when we train our libraries, we tell them they should collect only as much information as they need and as little as possible. So we generally discourage it. We generally discourage putting in driver's licenses, social security numbers are a no-no. But we don't actively cleanse the database of those things like you're doing.
I only had to cleanse it once.
Yeah. So we're hitting on it over and over again, but Koha is so like customizable that it can handle different scenarios like that. I don't think I have much to add on any of the other things here. We do use, so when we started as a consortium, we were Wild West willy-nilly, you can do whatever you want. That was pre-Jason. So we had over 1,200 shelf locations at one point, which is a lot.
Wow.
Patron categories have never been as bad, though. We've generally shared patron categories as much as possible. I do have some like outlier customization for certain libraries that need it. But for the most part, our consortium, we've gotten on the same page for everything and everybody's using the same categories. We do offer the option to link parent and child accounts versus the guarantor guarantee feature, which is a whole other privacy issue. But Koha's handled that well because the Europeans that were involved in that decision making decided that it should be the child account that gives the parent permission, which is something that we fully support. If a teenager wants to go into their account at some point and cut their parent off, we're totally cool with that. So
yeah, same.
Was super flexible in that regard.
Well, and if you want, you can even disable those fields and not link patron accounts at all, which is what we did at the library I was at in Idaho. So cataloging structure. So one of the areas where we differ, you know, Koha circulation rules are defined by the library that owns an item, or they're defined by library, patron type, and item type. And so that's where collection codes and shelf locations can get out of control, because they don't influence anything. They're just there to identify items. They don't have any driving factor in creating circulation rules. It's interesting, you know, there's people here from all over the country using all kinds of different ILSs. And there was a discussion when I got here this morning at the table I was at about how to get different members of a consortium all using the same circulation rules, and which is impossible. That's my experience. But for cataloging structure, you know, we try to make choices that are going to make sense in the systems that we're using, which has been a big change for us adding Aspen Discovery, because that adds a new layer. Koha is a lot more forgiving about cataloging. Koha is a lot more gentle about bad cataloging practices. Not getting the leader right, not getting the 007 and the 008 right. Koha is more forgiving about those things. But when you add those records into Aspen Discovery, complications arise.
And just a note on similar but different. So like collection codes versus shelf locations, we're down the street from each other, but we basically have those flip-flopped. So collection codes for me are the broad categories that we run or more general stats on, and shelf locations are the more specific categories like genres and things, which I think you guys do it the opposite way, sort of.
Yeah, we only have three shelving locations: adult, child, and young adult. And that helps us. It makes it a lot easier for us at the end of the year to do our statistical reporting for the IMLS and for the state library, because we can just say adult items. There's just one field that we have to look at to determine those things. And then all of our genres, all of our fiction, nonfiction, what type of video it is, whether it's Blu-ray, CD, or Blu-ray, DVD, whatever, that's all handled in collection codes, and you're kind of the opposite. So
I think we're both sort of in the same boat on item types, though, because as George mentioned, it controls how things circulate. So that was another one I had to clean up when I started, because our item types were things like 1D7R, 1.00 for like a specific rule. So we went to a more generic formula for that. So like we've got books circulate as books. And that allows us to, again, lean back on local control, where a library can have different circulation rules for book, depending on where the patron's standing at the point of checkout.
Should we go ahead to the next one, Shang?
Varying.
I guess we talked about one patron, one account. This is another area where we both differ, is holds prioritization. And Koha has this magical thing that is a beast to fill in called the holds transportation cost matrix, where you can assign a value saying if library A is shipping to library B, there's a value, and library C has a different value and library D has a different value. So it all gets laid out as a big table, which when you've got 50 libraries, you have 50 rows and 50 columns. And so coming up with a way to fill that in, it's a really fiddly process. And my solution to that is we don't use it. But there's a reason we don't use it. The goal is to make it so that the thing that's going to get there fastest gets there fastest. But the issue we have is in Kansas, we have a statewide courier service. And my biggest libraries are all on the same courier route. And so the way turning on the whole transportation cost matrix would make it so that the biggest libraries would all be sharing more with each other, and the courier on that route is already overloaded with stuff. And so it would just exacerbate a problem that exists differently, but Jason's libraries do that differently.
Yeah, so sharing is the whole point for us.
Yes.
It's what we love most, because it's so streamlined and seamless. With our one patron, one account card policy, it means that the patron can go to any of our 53 libraries, pick up something off the shelf and check it out. But over that, it's streamlining of placing holds. So the patron can place the hold a week or so, sometimes less, sometimes more. It'll show up. It's really, really easy for staff too. All they have to do is check the items in on both ends, print some slips. Notification is all automated, that sort of thing. So we love how Koha handles sharing. For the holds prioritization, as George was talking about, we do use the transport cost matrix as a weight balancing. Since we do have some of those medium larger libraries, they're going to have more staff time to fill holds. And actually at the system office, we share a space with the Iola Public Library, and about 2/3 of that collection is actually purchased by the system and just housed at the Iola Public Library. So we're actually at the very tip top of the transport cost matrix, and we always fill the holds if we can. And then I've got the larger libraries prioritized down lower, and then the very small libraries lowest priority because they have the least amount of staff time to handle filling holds. And it works pretty well for us. I mean, there's a lot of other intricacies built in there where if, like, the hold is for the patient and the book is on the shelf there, obviously it's going to fill that first. But in general, it's getting things in the hands of the patients as fast as possible. We do also tie in, there's like three parts to the formula I use. We've got several courier hubs, so that comes into play. How often the library is open. So if they're only open 2 days a week, they're going to get holds on their queue less than my 5 day a weeks. And there's a third one that I'm not recalling right now, but we also do use local holds prioritization. So again, if the brand new item goes out, and then a patron that owns of the library that owns it puts a hold on it, it's going to come right back and skip all those other 100 holds. We also lean into Koala lets us do author clubs, or club holds is what we call them, where we can put on a whole bunch of holds at once, so the patrons don't have to like keep track. Like, they're going to get the new Patterson every time we add one. New item sharing is the next bullet point on there, and that's the sharks and the fishes for me.
Yeah.
So largely we have gotten it to where all but four of my libraries now are sharing all their new stuff immediately, and that's what we like to see. That's what we call the sharks. So like, because of all this other stuff built in, we've create a level of comfort where they're able to just let the system work. They don't have to manipulate anything. They don't have to micromanage anything. But we did have some libraries and boards who wanted to have a browsing shelf. So we do have it set up where reciprocity is enforced. So if they don't share their new stuff, then they can't borrow new stuff until it's not new anymore.
Yeah, we've almost gotten to the point where I have a few libraries that don't like to share, and almost all of those directors have been replaced with new directors who are told you can't do that anymore. So we're on the way to getting rid of that. So I think we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left. So yeah, we're getting close to the end. We're only 9 slides left. So support, you know, one of the things that we do particularly as a system is we, because we're managing Koha for them, we're the first line of support. Like I said, Jason and I both use Bywater Solutions to host our Kohas. And so if there are any problems that we can't answer, any problems or questions from our members that we can't answer, we can bump, then we're the ones that push it along to Bywater. And that prevents Bywater from being hit with questions about why does the book cover for this one show up wrong? You know, we can answer those questions so that Bywater doesn't have to. And we do provide training. I was just at a training last week at one of our small libraries, and I took our new, I have an assistant now. There's two people working in for NextSearch catalog now, which is kind of a change for us. But I took my new person up and we did a cataloging training for libraries in, I forget which county, it might be Jefferson County in our area, at one of the smaller libraries. And we also provide training for upgrades, and we have various levels of support documentation, and which is similar to what you
guys have. Yeah, pretty much the same. I mean, we've got, most everything comes to me. We've got a head of cataloging that's got her hands, and she's got an assistant in the catalog, like making sure everything comes through okay. So she's there for cataloging support. We've got a head of resource sharing that's there to help with all those things that go missing and go wrong with holds and whatnot. And we've got a small staff that sort of handles the training as well. but sort of similar to George. It's all about triaging issues and sending it up to Bywater if it's an actual bug or problem. Although I have gotten in the habit of just filing my own bugs, which is another great thing about Koha, is like,
yes,
we can just do that ourselves and then it's out there in Bugzilla. And we do develop local documentation. It's sort of, we water down the Koha documentation because it's too much for our little libraries, for sure. All right, so the next part is how Koha helps libraries be better. So just as a, we stuck the Koha Explorers groups in there just as a side mention. So we meet twice a year. That's our statewide Koha group. We usually meet at KLA, which is our state conference, and then we'll rotate it around at one of the member HQs for the other meeting, and that's usually in the spring. And it's just sort of like a layer up. So we've got our consortia where we talk about issues and things. The Koha Explorers group is issues in Kansas. What do we want to talk about? Do we want to collaborate on developments, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's the Explorers group meetings are kind of like, this is what we're doing, this is what we're experiencing, and just meeting regularly twice a year and talking about, you know, this is how we're handling something that's come up for us. Are you guys having the same problem? Or, you know, recently we added, we did a development together where we added, we had Bywater Solutions write code for us that modified our Z3950 server, which helps the state's ILL system better identify what's available and what's not available. So that kind of stuff happens at these meetings. And then how Koha helps us, you know, it's flexible.
Yeah.
We're both using the same system and our systems are different completely.
And another thing here is like, it's web-based. Awesome. Like if I pick up a library that doesn't use Microsoft products, say, then they can use Chrome, they can use Firefox, they don't need any special software. I know in the olden days you had to like download the client and like then it would break and things like that. Never happens with Koha. It's just there in the cloud, and you can access it anywhere. You don't necessarily, it's not demanding, it's a big old website, so if you can run a website, you can run Koha for the user interface. Also intuitive. It's so easy to use.
Yeah.
Like we train librarians of all skill levels. A lot of our little rural libraries are, sorry for the stereotype, but like little old ladies, retirees, people that maybe aren't so great with computers, and they pick up Koha just as fast as the people that have been using computers all their lives.
When I mentioned I did a training last week, that the library director at that library is 83. So did okay.
Yes. Yeah, it's just, I tell people, if you've been to the internet, you can use Koha. It's really that simple. It's a series of forms and boxes and a search box. So we love how easy it is to train on and get people up and going with. It's customizable. We could go on like hours and hours about how we've customized Koha, but it does give us the option to configure it the way we have using system preferences, and also modify it. So you saw how different our different OPACs were. That's just web dev coding. So HTML, CSS, JavaScript, we have access to affect those things in our local systems, which is great. Anything you want to say there?
I know it's customizable because for the last 5 years, I've been doing a web video every other week with a friend of mine from Idaho about Koha customization. That's almost all we talk about in our web videos. So
we already touched on like affordability for our small libraries, but just in general, yes, it's free and open source, but you're generally paying a company for it, but it's still like head above shoulders cheaper than any of the proprietary systems would quote us if we were to take what we're doing and put it on their system, and it wouldn't work as well, I don't think.
Yeah, when I was, the last system I used when I was in Idaho, we were paying $1,000 a year per computer that had the client software installed on it. And that was for a proprietary system. It's the system I don't name. It's like Voldemort in the Harry Potter books. It's the the evil ILS that will not be named. And when it came time, when we wanted to migrate away from that, and they said, well, if you need data, we can get you your bibliographic records. We can export that all. It's $10,000 and we can do that in June. We wanted to migrate out in April and they couldn't even get us on their calendar until June. And so we did it all ourselves. That was, Koha is great for doing it all yourself. So how we work together outside of Kansas, we mentioned earlier Koha US. And I actually have pamphlets from Koha US if anybody's interested. We just had our annual conference in Rhode Island 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. And Koha US has been a going thing since 2015. So it's been, somebody here has been to 10 Koha US conferences. I've only been to 9. I missed one. And some of us are going to New Zealand in a few months or 2 months. So being able, you know, we have this layer of, you know, we have our own libraries. We have the Kansas Koha group. And then we have Koha US. And then beyond that, there's the whole Koha community. So one of the things I wanted to mention about the Koha community is, you know, we always say the most important thing is community. And Chris Cormack is going to be talking here. I think it's a remote presentation is what it sounds like, but his presentation is Thursday at 2:30. And he's going to talk about the origins of Koha again, and how he feels that the most important aspect of any open source project is the soul of the community rather than the actual code base itself. He is always a really good speaker. So if you have it, if you're going to still going to be here on Thursday, that's definitely something to consider going to. So that's one of the great things about Koha is nobody owns the